Chapter 16. Tuesday, April 19th, 0011 New Era, 0132 hours, 5 days later. Rain pounded on the city of Novosibirsk. It had done so for the last several days, as the weather in the city had turned into something strange. Novosibirsk never had been known for its hospitable climate, but now a different kind of thickness loomed in the air. The sky was supernaturally black, and the winds moaned like a chorus of banshees delivering their farewell. Some Eden soldiers blamed Thor for the heaviness, while others blamed the Nightmen. Some pinned it as something different, something new. It was as if God himself was looking down on Novosibirsk through his darkened clouds, warning it of wrath that loomed over the horizon. But Novosibirsk was not afraid of God, or of banshees, or of anything. Inside, the men and women of the 14th slept, oblivious to the elemental onslaught that waged outside. Even amid the constant pound of rain, none of them stirred. None of them stirred until God struck the earth with his giant hand, and a single crack of deafening thunder destroyed the steady thrum of rainfall. Jaden's eyes flew open, like loaded guns cocked and ready to fire. He scanned the rest of the room quickly. Darkness shifted into reality. All bunks were still. All operatives slept. Only he was aware. His brow furrowed and his senses perked. Something was wrong. Something in the room was different. Something was not supposed to be there. His ears adjusted as they tuned out the thunderstorm and they began their silent interrogation of room 14. It was an accepted truth that snipers were in a class of their own. There was something distinct about the composure of their senses that few others possessed. It was their innate ability to tune in with the world around them, yet still be able to isolate and remove selected distractions. It was a natural ability, one that allowed them to pick apart their surroundings and to examine whatever inconsistencies they found. Snipers were born for one purpose, to be snipers. Jaden was no exception. He filtered away the outside noise, the rain and the thunder. Then he removed the breathing of those who slept, followed by the creaks of bedsprings as operatives tossed and turned. Only then did his ears perk. His senses focused on the anomaly. There was definitely something else. There was another noise, one that was unnatural among the sounds of the night. Several noises. Voices. They were voices spoken in a way not meant to be heard. There was only one place in room 14 suitable for the nocturnal veil of secrecy. The lounge. A glance to the lounge door revealed sparse light beneath it. Jaden threw a glance around the room. Beacon was in his bunk, as was Boris. Only Fox and Kevin had been released from the infirmary, and both were visible under their respective covers. Galina and Varvara were in plain sight, which left three people unaccounted for. Clark, Baranov, and Dostoevsky. The officers. Jaden slid from the covers of his upper cot and slipped down the ladder of his bunk, where his bare feet touched the floor with a jolt of iciness. The rain still slammed, and the thunder still boomed, though now they were little more than glorified distractions. Cautious to remain silent, he tiptoed across the room until he was beside the lounge door. He crouched to a knee, cocked his head, and placed his ear by the doorframe.
Well, we needn't.
Despite their secrecy, the voices he heard were clear and recognizable.
"He isn't exactly a necessary position,"
Clark said, eyeing Dostoevsky, whose face was lit by the portable lamp that illuminated the countertop. He shifted to Baranov.
"But someone will need to take his rank."
"Yes, Captain,"
Baranov answered. Dostoevsky nodded as well.
"In my opinion, we've only got two choices, Travis or Max. Personally, I'm leaning towards Max. Travis never has struck me as a brilliant leader."
"He's not even a brilliant pilot."
"He does what's expected of him."
"But only what is expected of him."
"That's why he's flying a vulture and not a vindicator,"
Dostoevsky said.
"We'll just consider that issue settled then. Max shall take over Tolya's position as lieutenant. Are we all in agreement on that?"
Baranov and Dostoevsky nodded.
"Very well. Tolya and Max were both technicians anyway, so we needn't adjust our orientation. So, Now that we've got that situation resolved, let's get back to our Delta Corps. Who have we got?
I have always liked Fox,
Dostoevsky said.
He's composed and he's a lot of common sense. Quiet, but he's a sniper. He's supposed to be quiet.
I agree,
Baranov said. Clark nodded.
So we've got Powers. Who else?
Well, the only other Gamma besides Gallia is Remington.
We've already discussed our medical situation. So let's consider Powers and Remington. What have we got on Fox?
Graduated almost 2 years ago, high scores. We all know this already. We do not need to discuss.
What I see is consistency. Fox has never done anything spectacular as far as I can remember. But he has always done his tasks well. He'll do the job right the first time. He's still young, yes, but he is dependable. He is a good role model.
I agree. Fox is a smart choice. He is a safe one. We do not have to worry about surprises.
The question now is, how would he be as a leader? Delta teeters on the edge of Epsilon, and Epsilon is a primer for Lieutenant. Standing back and taking orders is fine and well, but when it comes time to pick up the reins and take command, will he have the initiative and the ability?
Jaden shifted as he listened by the door.
I believe so,
Dostoevsky answered.
As do I.
Clark and Dostoevsky faced Baranov, who drew in a heavy breath. He hesitated before saying,
I am unsure. You cannot tell how a person will react until they are in a situation that requires it. Fox has never been in that situation before. He's not very vocal, but at times this is a good thing. I do not know. That is my answer.
Clark nodded.
A perfectly legitimate one. Delta's no small task, and some people never get that high. But we'll have to see. And then we have Remington, our little gift from Richmond. I'm very curious as to your thoughts on him.
I like Remington. I had doubts at first, just as we all did, but after what I saw Thursday, I was impressed. He has ability and initiative.
Remington is overestimated by everyone.
Dostoevsky grumbled.
And where were you when Sveta was running away?
Dostoevsky's eyes narrowed.
He performed well when he was with me. He followed orders and engaged the Bakma. The only time he acted was when somebody had to act. He was not waiting for an opportunity to be hero. He watched Sveta run down the hill like the rest of us. Only when he saw that she was not going to make it did he jump, and then there was no hesitation. Many times I have seen the new soldiers rush into battle and do something so stupid that it makes me want to shoot them myself to save the enemy the trouble. I'm even embarrassed for some rookies who try so hard to be noticed, but I did not feel that way about Remington. This is how I know he was not acting like a hero. I was not embarrassed for him. I envied him.
Clark listened carefully.
I am a leader. I'm supposed to lead by example. When I watched him running across the snow, I remember thinking to myself, that should be me. We've all known Sveta for a long time, and none of us...
He glanced at Dostoevsky.
None of us did anything to save her. It took someone who had known her for only a few days to jump out of a ship and run after her alone. My heart hurt after that. When I visited Sveta for the first time, it was hard for me to look her in the eye. If not for Remington, we would have all just watched her get shot to death.
And we almost lost two operatives instead of one.
Do you have a heart?
Okay, gentlemen. Personally, I've never been fond of soldiers taking matters into their own hands. But at the same time, there is an excellent chance that Svetlana would have died had he not interfered. That's undeniable. Mr. Remington's knack for heroics, whether intentional or not, is also undeniable. I look over the report filed by his colonel at Richmond after Chicago, and I must confess it was a very impressive read. It's definitely a difficult choice between he and Mr. Powers, if not an interesting one.
Baranov and Dostoevsky stared at Clark, who smiled and leaned back in his chair.
Do I need to ask you for your verdicts?
Fox,
Dostoevsky answered. Baranov shook his head.
I say Remington.
Difficult call, and ultimately, it's mine. Remington might be a good choice, but I know what I'm getting with Fox.
Powers is a good choice. He will do well.
They're both good choices. I would just rather go with someone I feel like I know and trust. Fox is one of the most consistent operatives I've worked with. He'll do brilliantly.
He looked between the two men where his gaze held on Dostoevsky. Dostoevsky's eyes moved away from the table and trained on the crack at the bottom of the lounge door. Clark opened his mouth, but Dostoevsky snapped a signal of silence. Clark held his tongue, and he and Baranov stared at the bottom of the door. Dostoevsky stood and stepped away from the table. Clark and Baranov watched as he edged to the far wall, then glided to the door's edge. He placed his hand atop the doorknob, gripped his fingers around it, and jolted the door open. No one. Dostoevsky padded into the bunk room and scanned it. Every operative was accounted for beneath the covers of their bunks. He hesitated for several seconds, then his gaze narrowed. Beneath the covers of his bed, Jaden laid still. The only movement that came from his body was the subtle breathing that caused his chest to rise and fall. Though the rain pounded outside, he could hear the quiet clump of the lounge door as it was closed. He made no attempt to look. He simply laid there and waited for true sleep to catch up with him. Almost 30 minutes later, after he heard the three officers leave the lounge and retire to their bunks, it did. Wednesday, April 20th, 0011, New Era, 0618 hours. By the next morning, the violent thunderstorm that had shaken the city of Novosibirsk had evolved into an airy snowfall that blanketed the base, typical Russian weather for that time of the year. The 14th's morning routine came in its traditional manner as operatives donned their attire and set the coffee and tea to brew. Soon after initial wake-up, the first breakfast crew ventured out of the living quarters. Beacon, Jaden, Fox, and Travis. It was a new custom for them to meet with William and Joe at that time for breakfast. They met in the hallways of the barracks and went to the cafeteria together. This time, only William was there to find them. The days began to lengthen, as sunrise was at almost a quarter after five. It gave Novosibirsk the stark comfort of brightness to greet the base's earliest risers. The frigidity lasted throughout the day. The snow-covered landscape in Novosibirsk was different than in America. Together with the faithfully overcast sky and the coldness of the base itself, the scenery was more bleak than beautiful. The cafeteria bustled with activity. The drowsy conversation of comrades, the stifled yawns of the recently awakened, and the clank of metal utensils. It took a short while for the five-man entourage to claim their breakfast, at which point they wandered through the room until they discovered an unclaimed table. Travis adjusted his tray as he sat down.
How long do you guys think everyone else will be in the med bay?
Remy and Dave shouldn't be in there too long. They're not as bad off as the others.
They might be let out today. I know Sveta is supposed to be released tomorrow. As far as Max and Kostya, they might be a while. At least a month, easy.
Strange how that happens. One minute you're fine, next minute you've got bullet holes. That's gotta be a scary thing.
You never been shot?
Nope. Been lucky so far.
How long you been in Eden?
4 years now. All of them here. All of them with vultures.
I can't see how you can stand being here so long. I've been here a week, and I already miss Richmond.
Fox took a sip of tea and nodded.
Richmond is one of the nicer facilities. I'd imagine Novosibirsk ranks among the worst comfort-wise, maybe with Leningrad.
Russians don't exactly put luxury at the top of their list. But hey, it's the military.
Yeah.
As the collective chewing mixed with the conversation around the cafeteria, William shifted in his chair to face Jaden. The Texan's eyes surveyed his plate as he ate in quiet. William watched for several seconds before he pointed and spoke.
You're too quiet. You freaked me out.
Jaden opened his mouth, but Beacon cut him off.
He's a wee bit cheesed off at the moment. See, he never gets called into action. Always has to sit back and watch everything happen. That's because he couldn't hit the broadside of an elephant.
Jaden shook his head and took another bite.
Is that so?
It is. He thinks his life's so difficult because he's from Texas. They don't favor education very much over there. As long as you can rope a steer and spit tobacco, you're good to go in their eyes. That's why the rest of the world is such a challenge to them.
Jaden was unable to stifle a chuckle, and he set his fork down. The others grinned.
So as yees can imagine, being the poor shot that he is, and without any formal education, me boyos kinda had the odds against him from the get-go.
Fox turned to Jaden and smiled.
You don't have it that bad. At least your parents didn't name you Fox.
The others laughed, and jovial conversation returned in full force. As the group talked, Travis's gaze shifted to the cafeteria door.
Fox, you said Svetlana was supposed to be let out tomorrow?
That's what I heard.
Well, for the first time in as long as I can remember, you're wrong.
Fox looked puzzled, then followed Travis's gaze around to the front of the cafeteria. The others at the table did the same. There, propped in the archway of the cafeteria door, was Svetlana. Galina and Varvara were at her sides as they inched toward the food line one step at a time. All conversation at the soldiers' table stopped. Galina and Varvara each held a hand on Svetlana's shoulders. Svetlana's look was non-cognizant. She cast a blank stare to the floor in front of her. The expression on her face was no expression at all. They watched in silence as Galina and Varvara led her to the line, where they progressed until they reached the counter. There they took a small portion of food, then left to claim a solitary table in the far corner of the room. Neither Galina nor Varvara carried a tray for themselves. The three women lowered themselves into their chairs, then they sat motionless. Svetlana's tray was placed square in front of her, though she made no effort to sample anything on it. Beacon watched in silence as Galina and Varvara's hands remained on Svetlana's shoulders. They made occasional gestures to the untouched tray of food, none of which prompted a response from her. Beacon's own gaze fell to the tabletop, where his tray of half-eaten food sat. Before any of his comrades could say anything, Beacon pushed back in his chair and rose to his feet. They watched as he excused himself in silence and began to weave through the cafeteria toward the table with the three women. Varvara caught sight of him as he neared. She offered him a sad smile as she massaged her hand on Svetlana's shoulder. Then she leaned in to Galina to whisper. A moment later, Galina glanced Beacon's way. Her expression mirrored Varvara's, and she slid from her chair to stand. She joined Beacon as he drew close, then turned to regard the now empty chair next to Svetlana.
Please sit,
she whispered.
That would be good for her.
Beacon hesitated. He looked at Galina, then Svetlana, who made no indication that she was aware of his arrival. Finally, after a slow approach, he lowered into the chair. Svetlana was a mess. What was once a striking and elegant appearance was now ragged and unkempt, as the golden hair that flowed to her shoulders was now tucked behind her ears in an oily slickness. The blue eyes that entranced with dangerous allure were now dim, suppressed above dark bags that revealed a woman who had not slept in days. She stared at her tray, despite Beacon's presence beside her. Silence surrounded them until Beacon rested his hand against her back.
You have to eat.
She offered no response, nor made any indication that she was aware of him. Beacon's eyes trailed to her tray, then returned to her.
Please.
There was nothing. No response. No movement. No lift of the eyes. Svetlana sat beside him, thousands of miles away. Beacon closed his eyes, then slid his arm around her shoulder and inched against her. As he gave her a hug, he leaned in to whisper in her ear,
"We're here for you, girl."
Her head turned a bit, though that was the extent of her reply. Stillness fell again. Beacon withdrew his arm, pushed away, and stood up. Galina joined him, placing her hand on his shoulder.
"Thank you,"
she mouthed. Varvara offered the same expression from her seat before the two women resumed their aid. Beacon stepped away from the table and slid his hands in his pockets. He looked back to the table from which he had come, where his male counterparts watched him. He locked eyes with them for a moment, then backstepped, turned around, and shuffled out of the cafeteria. Jaden frowned as Beacon exited.
Man, that sucks.
Yeah,
Travis said as he sighed and looked at his own plate.
He tried, though. That's the best he could do. I feel for Svetlana. She really is a good girl.
Fox turned in his chair to face them.
Tolya was a good guy.
What do you think's gonna happen to you guys now?
How do you mean?
Well, you lost the lieutenant. I mean, someone's gotta replace him, right?
Jaden stared deliberately at the table space in front of him.
That is true. I'm actually surprised nobody's been moved up yet. They usually get to that kind of thing faster than this.
Maybe Clark's slacking.
William harrumphed.
I doubt that. Clark's usually very good with that kind of thing. He's probably just been busy.
He reached for the untouched apple on his tray and held it in his hand. He raised it in front of his face, inspecting it thoroughly.
But I don't know who'll end up getting promoted over this.
Travis offered a half smile.
I wonder if I'll get moved up.
Jaden looked at the pilot, saying nothing.
You've only been here for what, 4 years? I think pilots have to be in for at least a decade before officer consideration.
Yeah, that seems about right.
I wonder about Remington. I'm sure he won't be promoted to lieutenant, but, well, I'm positive they'll need someone to take an extra Delta role.
He certainly ain't gonna bump him based on his fighting skills.
He is an interesting individual, though. Don't forget, he is the Golden Lion. It's not every day someone like that comes around. Some people just have it.
What's it?
I like him.
Fox pointed immediately.
That is it. Why do you like him, Travis?
I don't know. He just seems like a really good guy. And I mean, look at what he did in Siberia. He saved Svetlana's life.
Fox nodded in conclusion.
Travis doesn't know him, but he likes him. And that's what it is. It's a combination of initiative and charisma that not everybody has.
But he can't fight.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot he can't do. One thing he can't do is please everyone, as is obvious with Max. But you don't have to please everyone. You just have to please your superiors. And if you can do that, there's no limit to how far you can go.
For the first time in the discussion, Jaden sparked to life.
Scott doesn't suck up. He never sucked up.
I never said he did.
And what he did in Chicago was great.
I never said it wasn't. What he did in Siberia probably saved Sveta's life, too. I'm simply stating the facts.
Scott's a great leader. I'd rather follow him than anyone else.
Come on, how can you say that? He's not even in a leadership position.
The Texan sat upright.
Because he's the only person who gives me a chance. I never get to do anything. I got left out of the bug hunt back in Richmond, and I got left out on the mission here. And it's all because I don't go around talking to everyone. I can't help it. I'm not all social like everyone else. Nobody even notices me around here. And I know it's me, but that's just me. That's who I am. But that shouldn't stop me from being given a chance. In Siberia, they needed a sniper on the mission. And you gotta go, but I didn't. That's not your fault. You're probably a great sniper. But if nobody gives me a chance, how am I supposed to prove anything? When Scott was in control in Chicago, he gave me a chance. He told me to get high in the building and shoot at the aliens. And he put faith in me to do it right. It wasn't like he was there watching me to make sure I didn't screw up. He trusted me. He even said, go do your thing. I was so proud to be a sniper that day. And I did a good job. He gave everyone a chance. He told Beacon to take command if he went down. He told Sasha to set up a hospital. And he even let Donner drive the van. That was all our first mission. And he never even met Donner before. But he gave us all a chance to do what we spent years training to do. Nobody got left out. That's why I say I'd rather follow him than anyone else, because he gives everybody a chance. And that's why I don't appreciate you saying things behind his back, like that he sucks up and stuff. So please, don't say stuff like that, because he's a hell of a good guy who tries to get everyone involved.
For several moments, nobody said a word. Jaden's face was flushed red, but he eventually slid back and resumed his silent persona. 20 seconds passed before Fox replied.
Sorry.
From that point on, the conversation dulled, though a few words were spoken about those in the infirmary, as well as speculation on the lack of recent alien activity. It all served more as end-of-discussion filler than relevant subject matter. Eventually, the four men stood up from the table, replaced their trays, and filed out of the cafeteria. William bid them farewell and departed to his unit's room. The rest of them journeyed back to room 14. When they returned, Clark awaited them. He, along with Dostoevsky and Baranov, sat beyond the open doors of the lounge at the central table. Kevin and Boris were with them, as was Beacon. It became apparent they were just in time for an impromptu meeting. As soon as those present were settled in the lounge, Clark eased the door shut and cleared his throat.
"There's a small bit that I'd like to speak with you about this morning while it's just us. I don't mind going on without the girls this morning, as this is a rather touchy subject, and their time is best spent together right now. For us, however, I'd like to conduct some business, as well as a small bit of personal reflection and wisdom, if you'll see it as such. I know that the death of Anatoly was something hard to swallow, for all of us. In no way do I intend, however, to look back upon his life and claim that his death was a wasted one. I know that this has been a cause of tension in the unit in several areas, understandably so, but the lieutenant died doing what he dedicated his life to doing, protecting Earth. He was given a direct order and followed it to the fullest extent of his capabilities. The general expects no less from each and every one of you, and I expect no less from each and every one of you. Svetlana has my heartfelt condolences. I've told her that already and left it at that. I've given her permission to request a temporary leave of absence if she so desires it. She's yet to respond to me on the matter. I've been serving in Eden since its inception. If there is one lesson I have learnt, and one that I suggest you all learn quickly, it's that no one is given the promise of a tomorrow. We live in a time when attacks come unexpectedly from all directions. We're forced into situations that we simply cannot plan for against an enemy that has a technological advantage. Deaths are inevitable. I have lost many friends throughout my years serving this organization, as you have all lost friends. While this is something I hope is never treated with apathy, it is something that must be accepted. The only thing that we as operatives can do is move on and continue to do our jobs to the utmost capacity. That is precisely what we, the command staff, intend on doing. Ivan.
Baranov cleared his throat.
The following changes have been made to the ranking structure of this unit. Delta Trooper Exen will be promoted to the rank of Lieutenant and Tertiary Officer Gamma Private. Powers will be promoted to rank of Delta Trooper. And last, Beta Private Jorgen will be promoted to Gamma. Though Exen and Jorgen are not here at present, we could not wait any longer before implementing these changes. They will be notified today of their new roles.
Clark spoke as soon as Baranov was finished.
These changes are effective immediately. Fox, you're the only one of those three present, so I'll tell you here. I expect from you the excellence that you've always given.
Fox bowed his head.
Yes, sir.
Very well. Now, everyone, get prepared for our morning session. It has not been overlooked. Today we will be running several courses, so dress for the cold. Dismissed.
The operatives filed out of the lounge to change as Clark, Baranov, and Dostoevsky remained behind in hushed discussion. As Beacon crouched down to open his duffel bag, he grumbled under his breath.
That was nice and motivational.
Travis cast a faint smile to Fox as he too changed into workout clothes.
Congrats, man.
Thanks. Hate to get it that way, but that's how it goes, I guess.
Well, I'm glad they moved Dave up a rank. Keeping him at Beta is a waste of his experience. Who do you think's going to tell him?
Fox knelt to tie his boots.
I'd imagine they'll send a courier or something. Or maybe one of the officers will go get them today.
Right. Hopefully they'll be back on their feet in a little bit anyway.
It took several minutes for the operatives to get bundled, at which point they gathered together and made the trek outside. The cold tore at them throughout the workout session, though it mattered little. As the procession of laps and exercises carried on, conversation flowed freely among them. There was a sense of forced but necessary return to normality. By the time the workout was finished, almost 2 hours later, all of the operatives present were adequately exhausted. It did not take long for room 14 to fill with the warm steam that gushed from the showerheads. It was justifiable compensation for the cold sting of the outside. As soon as the rush of showers was over, each of the operatives returned to their individual expenditures of time. The routine of Novosibirsk once again set in.